How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is Turning Point Sunday. Moments after the show goes off the air, TNA will be running their Turning Point pay-per-view. We're going to do live running play-by-play on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com with Dave Meltzer. So if you don't get the show, you're welcome to head up there and follow along. Of course, later on this evening, a brand new radio show only at WrestlingObserver.com covering all of the matches, backstage notes from the show, and more. That's coming up tonight. But before that, we got a show to get into today. And as always, a lot of news, not the least of which is we are going to welcome back Mike Sempervivi after 2 weeks. 2 weeks of absence related to Hurricane Sandy. We're going to talk to him about that, how things are going, and then get into the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're going to run down the TNA pay-per-view, all the matches, talk the New Japan iPay-per-view from last night, which in fact Mike Sempervivi just got done watching. Linda McMahon coming off the costliest run for public office in the history of the world, and she didn't make it. Again, nearly $100 million in the hole for the McMahon family. Now, granted, they still have about $300 million left, but still, that's a lot of money to dump into something like that. We're going to talk about that, plus talk about the Survivor Series, the death of Brad Armstrong. Jerry the King Lawler is returning to the broadcast booth on Monday, almost 2 months to the day after suffering a near-fatal heart attack. We'll tell you about that, plus what the new announced team is going to look like for the time being. Talk about all of the TV from the past week, WrestleMania tickets, the doom of Strikeforce. Strikeforce is done after January. Ronda Rousey, the first ever UFC 135-pound women's champion. We're going to talk about that, plus some big matches coming up, including George St. Pierre's return to the octagon against Carlos Condit. That fight takes place next Saturday night, not last night, as UFC incorrectly advertised on their own show. All of that and more coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet, WrestlingObserver.com, Tapatalk app on all of your smartphones. We're all over the place, so don't miss us. And returning to the show after a three-week hiatus is, in fact, the man himself, Michael P. Sempervivi. Mike, how you doing?
Not too bad. As you know, the P stands for quality. And I have a question for you. Did you miss me?
Oh, God. Let me tell you. Having Josh Nason on the show last week? Wow. Actually, Josh did a hell of a job. And, amazingly, I did a one-hour solo 2 weeks earlier, which I'd never even done before on this program. So
look at that. See the silver linings coming out of Hurricane Sandy. You were able to set, you know, give yourself a audio milestone, which is not easy for you with all the audio you do.
Now tell everybody about Sandy. What happened?
Yeah, Sandy, Mother Nature's whore of a daughter, decided to plow into the East Coast as part of the Frankenstorm, which basically affected every state east of the Mississippi. It literally did. They had like 20-foot swells in Lake Michigan, but where I live on the East Coast, basically right at the Maryland-Delaware line, one of the initial tracks for this storm was going to go right over us. And if that was the case, you saw what happened in New Jersey on the coastal towns and up into Long Island, and all the damage that it did there, it would have done some serious wiping out of the area I'm in. So I'm very lucky and very blessed that way. Although, obviously, for those people who are still recovering right now, my cousin up in New Jersey is still out of power, and it's just it was a big mess. So despite the fact that the store I'm at actually took on some water, luckily my house was okay, and everybody I know pretty much got out of it unscathed, but my thoughts still go to everybody up in the Northeast who is still suffering right now, without power, just a monumental amount of damage. And temperatures getting colder now too, and it's just a, you know, a really terrible freak storm. But luckily, made it out of it okay on my end, and I'm happy to be talking about, you know, people who are half naked beating themselves up on a canvas mat than dealing with any more weather.
I like how you said that your store took on some water.
Well,
I saw photos.
We're only about 3 miles away from the ocean, and unfortunately, there's a lot of bays around us. And
you were 0 miles from the ocean.
That's based on these photographs.
The ocean was in your store.
The ocean pushed the bays, and yes, the bays decided to settle about 3 to 6 inches worth of water in a store. And in a store where you have, you know, so many packages that come in cardboard, I don't know if you know this or not, cardboard doesn't do well when it's wet, especially when it's got, you know, 24 half gallons of vodka sitting on top of it. So, obviously a lot of cleanup that way, tearing out rugs, drywall, the whole nine yards. But, at least we didn't have a situation like apparently happened around us where there was a guy out on his deck and everything around him was taking up water, and there was a boat floating down the street. Literally, it was a boat that got loose, was floating down the street at his house. So he figured, well, I've got to try to save my house. I don't want this boat to slam into it. So he took out a shotgun and started blasting this fiberglass boat, doing absolutely nothing to it, but it did end up making for a really good story.
Wow. Well, I'm glad everything turned out all right. And obviously, best wishes to everybody still dealing with this issue. When I hear that people still have their power out, wow. I lose power for 2 hours here, and I'm absolutely infuriated. I don't even know what I would do if there was no power for, like, a week. I mean, it's just a terrible story. The whole thing is just terrible. But luckily, you and everybody else made it out unscathed, out in your neck of the woods, and hopefully everybody that is listening to this out there is dealing with it the best they can. So, is it 3 weeks out now? 3 weeks that people have been dealing with this?
I guess at least 2 weeks now. It's been 2 full weeks.
Now, you're aware that in the middle of all of this, in the middle of all of this Hurricane Sandy coverage, when there are people out of power and people whose houses have, as you noted, taken on a little water, in the middle of all of this, do you know who is still running campaign ads, angry, vociferous campaign ads? Linda McMahon.
Yes,
Linda McMahon. She, about, I'd say a month ago, in the Senate race, she was neck and neck. And she was neck and neck, having spent less than she did the first time she attempted to run in 2010. And in the last 3 weeks, she went into a self-destructive tailspin. As noted, as everyone is attempting to deal with the issues related to Hurricane Sandy, anytime they turned on the television, there was Linda McMahon talking about how much her opponent sucked and this and that and the other thing. And by the time the election came along, she lost by, I believe, 10 points, perhaps even more. But she had turned off an amazing number of voters. Not just people that, like, didn't want to vote for her, like they were choosing Chris Murphy instead, but people that were sick of her. People that were quoted in the New York Times saying things such as, if I ever see that woman again, or I am sick to death of these ads. That's what it'd come to at the end. And I believe $96 million was spent between the two campaigns. Linda McMahon not getting office. And there's a video. I don't know if you've seen it, but it is her speech, her concession speech. And in the background, there's Vince McMahon, who's doing a Vince McMahon gulp. He cannot even attempt to kayfabe his true feelings. He just looks so sad. And a devastating loss, I'm sure, for Vince financially and whatever his intentions were for his wife getting into office. But that's the way things work. And your thoughts on the campaign and the end of the road for Linda McMahon?
Yeah, there was a guy from the Connecticut Mirror, Mark Pazanakis, who was on one of the TV stations up there because the race was called so early. I mean, the early polls had started to close in places like Delaware, Connecticut, and everything. And almost like a snap of a finger, The thing was called. Murphy had that big of a lead, and it just was going to be insurmountable for McMahon, you know, no matter how long they tried to counter or hold out. She was losing that campaign, but he was talking about, you know, recent failures in Connecticut of, you know, quote, self-funding millionaires, the candidates who, on both sides, who have basically tried to buy the elections, and not buy the elections as far as bribing anyone, but just the massive amount of money used, and it's their own money. And while it seems great on the surface, the reality is a lot of the times it gets to the end and people can't relate to those people spending that amount of money when they're in need of it. And then it's just the fact they're getting beaten over the head with it over and over and over, which seemed to really send a backlash against Linda. And, you know, it was unfortunate it got called so early for her point, because it let all of the national pundits really, you know, start cracking jokes and things like that. But it looks, you know, and good for you know, Vince McMahon's pocketbook, it looks like her career is over and they can just continue to go as, you know, funding. And that's another thing he had brought up, too. It's they're not even attractive in their own party many times because they're needed in that they have the money, and they have the money to donate to the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, but you don't necessarily want those people actually running for the office. And so there's, I guess, a little bit of an exhale in the Connecticut GOP over the fact that they're going back to being what they really would want them to be, which is pure donors.
Yeah, she screwed up there at the end big time when, in a last-ditch effort to get votes, she managed to get herself on the ballot as a Republican and an independent, and asked voters, hey, it's okay to vote for Barack Obama and myself, Linda McMahon. And, of course, the Republican Party not happy about that.
That and was basically the political version of the there's going to be naked cheerleaders at halftime of the XFL game.
Yeah, she, well, I don't know what it would, that was an odd analogy, but.
The cameraman hits his head down, see, it just, you know.
Sure. She committed political suicide right there, and that's the end of her. But that is the end of this segment as well. So when we come back, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news. Enough of this politics! Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and of course, the Sports Byline channel on the, I think I said Tapatalk app. That's wrong. The TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. If you download that app, which on a lot of phones is free, you can listen to this show on your phone live every Sunday afternoon. You don't have to try and find the channel on Sirius or a local Sports Byline affiliate. You can plug that phone into your car speakers and listen to your heart's content. The TuneIn Radio app. Tapatalk is great if you want to go on our board. Which, God forbid, actually our board is, it's been a lot better of late, I guess. I don't know. I don't go on it much. Anyway, Mike, today is a big day. Today, everyone, set your DVRs. Shortly after this show goes off the air, a brand new season of Finding Bigfoot. Are you aware of that, Mike?
I did not know this.
My God, can I not wait? You know.
I thought you found Bigfoot.
No, I didn't find Bigfoot. Oh. I found nothing on that trip.
Damn.
Did you know that they have got 20 new episodes in the can of Finding Bigfoot?
Wait, 20?
20 new episodes.
Most seasons, like 13, they 20.
Yeah, that's how popular. This show, I believe, is the second most popular show in the history of Animal Planet, other than Whale Wars. I think they may be close to the number of viewers every week as Impact. I'd have to go look at the numbers. I know they're over a million viewers on Animal Planet. So we're talking a huge success of a television show. And they've got 20 episodes this season. For those of you interested, they not only look around the United States, but they travel internationally attempting to find Bigfoot and his furry cousins. So that's tonight on Animal Planet. Brand new episode. Check it out. I'm getting no money for this, which actually is appalling to me, but I am plugging it out of the love in my heart for this show, Finding Bigfoot. So that's tonight, everybody. Make sure you check it out. Also tonight, apparently, is the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view. Mike, are you aware of that?
Amazingly, I was aware of that, even though I haven't had a chance to see the last couple weeks of TV. I knew it was going to happen, but as excited as you sounded about Bigfoot, I may have to check that out instead.
Yeah, they have a special. I got more. They do a special behind the scenes of Finding Bigfoot that is going to air before the new episode tonight. And I don't want to dissuade anybody from listening to this particular programming, but Finding Bigfoot marathon all day today. It's ongoing right now. They're trying to find Bigfoot from last season.
I tell you what, a Finding Bigfoot UFO Chasers crossover show could be fantastic.
Trying to find Bigfoot that come out of UFOs?
Can you imagine? That may be where they go. You think about it, you never see Bigfoot. You always get the blurry picture and everything of him, which, as Mitch Hedberg always said, what would really be scary is if Bigfoot was actually blurry and it wasn't the picture. But can you imagine? Possibly Bigfoot loads himself onto a UFO and takes off. That's why we're never able to trap a Bigfoot.
Mike, there have been sightings of Bigfoot coming out of UFOs.
My mind is blown.
Yeah. How about that? Now, speaking of Bigfoot, to segue into wrestling, before we get into Turning Point, you haven't been on the show since Ryback got his main event push. What did you think about the finish of Hell in a Cell?
It was a way to get out of it. Again, it was amazing because I was such under the impression that they were going to have two Hell in a Cell matches that I was just, when Cena, it looked like there was a possibility of Cena not being in it. I can't believe they didn't use Heyman to invoke something and weasel, even though people wouldn't have been happy, to weasel themselves out of that situation. So you didn't have to do what you did with, who's the Tom Brady pretty boy with the really tight vest?
Oh, the one that my granny loves?
Yes.
Brad Maddox,
who I think, I don't know, maybe he got his training. I heard him talking about his training on Raw. Maybe he got his training with the Bravado Brothers' grandmother because that's kind of what he looks like. I think if you could have switched that out, you wouldn't have had to do that type of finish. But I guess, really, at the end of the day, even though we didn't get like a wacky Lesnar run-in or somebody pulling off the door or anything like that, I think they got out of it okay. It was a really cheap way to do it, and I don't think it was that incredibly inventive or anything like that, but there's only so many things you can do in that situation. And then you got the big thing at the end where Ryback chased him up the cage, which, that was something that I probably didn't really need to see, or never really need to see again either. But you get the big spot up there where Ryback drops him, so I guess that sends people home happy. But, again, I was surprised they just didn't get out of it in a different way.
You know the faith they must have had in Ryback to have him do a full match, 10-12 minute match, and then after it was over, climb a cage?
Yeah, that's just one of those things. I don't know. That wouldn't have been something I would do, but hey.
All right, Turning Point today. This is the TNA pay-per-view, and Mike, as you noted, you haven't watched any Impact in like 3 weeks, so maybe you don't know what's going on, but at the same time, maybe you do, because a lot of times, nothing ever changes in TNA. So let's go over this card here. Did you see the last, you saw Bound for Glory, correct?
Yes, I did.
So you saw Aries and Jeff Hardy. What are your thoughts on Aries and Jeff Hardy in a ladder match for the TNA title?
It's going to be really good and everything. And, at the pay-per-view, obviously, they were surprised in that Aries was, they quickly turned him heel leading into this thing with Jeff Hardy. But he got a lot of cheers. And then I remember that first Impact afterwards, it seemed to, the tide back at the Impact Zone was back in Jeff Hardy's favor. So I don't know how this has, been between, as far as fans' reactions or anything like that, but, one of the things that Austin Aries, they kind of screwed up with him was the fact that he was not wrestling. And, as good of a guy as he is, he's got to, counterbalance his, promos and everything else with the fact that he's really good in the ring and is really good working with different guys. And he and Jeff Hardy are, one of the best mixes you could probably have in that company for the most part. So I'm looking forward to the match again. The first one was okay, but, hopefully this time around it's even better. I would figure Jeff Hardy holds on to the belt, and it is his match, so I'll go with Jeff Hardy.
Probably a pretty good bet. I think Hardy's going to get a run for a while, and then he won't re-sign, and he'll leave as champion. I don't think that's actually going to happen. But I guess the same thing kind of happened with D-Von in the X Division title. I should add that as of the time that you are listening to this, to the best of my knowledge, they have not announced that Tara and Jesse against ODB and Eric Young is for the TNA Mixed Tag Team titles. Eric Young is, his contract is expiring, and they are very far apart on money. So there's a decent chance he's not going to return. So it would make sense to me to have ODB and Eric Young defend their mixed tag team titles and lose them to Tara and Jesse. That would seem to make the most sense to me, but that may not be the direction they're going, which would be baffling to me. But stranger things have happened, such as letting D-Von leave as champion. And I guess we'll see what happens here. D-Von obviously did return in the end. But still, let's get that belt off Eric Young here tonight.
He could just go away for good, you know, and quietly make that happen. That would be okay. But, yeah, I figure the same thing with, you know, Tara and Mr. Pectacular Jesse Goddard, which, you know, they from what I've seen, that hasn't been... You know, they've been over-the-top annoying, which is actually, you know, but not at least to the point of turn-the-channel type stuff. So I'm fine with Tara and Mr. Pectacular.
I think they're a good little tandem. I think they're working well together. I don't think they're, I don't know how much farther I'd go than that, but I think that they're, I think they're doing well with that gimmick. I like Mr. Pectacular. Not very good in the ring, obviously, yet very green. But he understands his character, and he does a good job playing his character. He's only green in the ring. How about that? He seems to be good at all other aspects so far, so that's good. We've got the World Tag Team Champions of the World, who are not, in fact, the Tag Team Champions of the World. Daniels and Kazarian are facing Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. If you read the Figure Four Weekly this week, Hernandez had an accident in a match last week. He tried to do his big dive. He hooked his foot on the top rope on accident, went straight down onto his head. And they thought he hurt some fingers, thought he got knocked a little batty. He ended up back working TV this Thursday, so he's fine. But in my opinion, stop doing that dive! He's way too big for it. And when you start hooking your feet on the ropes here and there, I gave him the benefit of the doubt when it happened, it's like three pay-per-views ago. But I remember the way that they did it. He had to dive a little lower than usual because there was another spot going on at the same time. And the whole thing was kind of it was a design disaster that kind of went awry. But this one at the house show, apparently he just tried to do his dive and didn't get high enough. So when that starts happening, stop doing the dive, because when are you going to stop otherwise? When you actually get hurt badly? I don't want to see that. So, anyway, the point is, they're putting their titles on the line against Daniels and Kazarian. It should be all right. Chavo and Hernandez have been all right. Not a great team or anything. Chavo's had some good matches, missed some spots, but I expect this will be all right.
It's not like Hernandez has ever had the reputation of the silkiest, smoothest guy in the world either, so you don't want to hurt somebody else doing it. And, yeah, he has always been way too big to do a lot of the dives he does. And, you know, on top of guys who are much, much smaller than him. But, again, Chavo and Hernandez as a team, though, I don't have a problem with whatsoever. You know, they need teams. And, you know, Chavo, you know, as you said, you know, some air in his moves sometimes. It's still better for Hernandez to be working with him, you know, and to have them over there in the tag team division. But until you get something just absolutely fantastic, I don't see any reason to take the belts off of Daniels and Kazarian. I mean, they should hold on to them for as long as they possibly can, unless they have something planned for them later on in singles, or they just have a really good team that's coming in that they could feud with and take the titles off of them. You know, keep running with that for as long as you possibly can.
All right, we got more of the card to run down, but we're heading up against a break. So we are going to take that break. When we come back, we're going to start with Bobby Roode, James Storm, and AJ Styles here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday afternoon. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are running down the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view, which begins moments after this show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And later on this evening, Dave and I are going to be up with a brand new radio show talking all of the matches on this show, top to bottom. A full review, backstage news and notes, thoughts on where they're heading, if any angles are shot on the show, all of the news from the weekend and more. One of about 10 to 15 shows we do every single week on the website. Dave and I just did a show last night talking UFC in China. Mike and I will talk more about that later on in this program. Got another show tomorrow night talking Raw. Essentially, if you love Wrestling Observer Live and you only get to hear the show one time per week, you are missing out. Daily radio shows at WrestlingObserver.com, recorded in the same studio that we record this show in. So you're getting the best audio quality of any pro wrestling or mixed martial arts website. Daily radio shows, an archive dating back to 2005. If you love audio, there is no better place in the world to go as a fan than WrestlingObserver.com. It's $10.99 per month. That's it. $10.99 a month. Gets you all of the brand new shows, all of the archived shows. You can listen to the shows from 2006, 2007. Let's say you want to go back and find out what happened at Turning Point 2008. Get on the website, do a search, find the show, download it, listen to it. You can also get all the shows downloaded automatically to your iTunes. There's information on that on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page for that. Plus, a listing of our latest free radio shows. If you want to get a different perspective of how these shows sound, you can download those shows. They are free. But essentially, if you like this show, you're going to like wrestling. You're going to love WrestlingObserver.com. Now, Mike, we're talking the Turning Point pay-per-view. There is a three-way on the show: Bobby Roode, James Storm, and AJ Styles. The gimmick is such: the winner is going to be the number one contender for the TNA title, and the man who gets pinned cannot challenge for the TNA title until Bound for Glory 2013. Which, I should add, brings up either an out or a quandary. If AJ Styles wins, let's say he gets pinned tonight, and then he wins the X Division title, that would mean that he would get to cash in the X Division title at Destination X. But would he not be allowed to do that if he got pinned tonight? Would he be allowed to do that if he got pinned tonight, which would get around the stipulation? Who is going to do the 11-month road to Bound for Glory after tonight's show?
I don't think it would be James Storm, because you already had James Storm on a long quest that didn't come out exactly as you wanted it to. Don't think you'd want to take Bobby Roode out of that equation, which then leaves you with AJ Styles doing it. And as you said, you've got the out from to create some TV, because I would doubt that they thought that far about it. If it is AJ Styles that's actually getting pinned, I doubt they had probably thought about those ramifications for much later on down the line. But I would rather see, I'd like to see Austin Aries and AJ Styles. I would like to actually see that. But I think, it can't be Storm to me. Bobby Roode, it doesn't really, I don't know if that makes any sense. And unfortunately for AJ Styles, he would be my odd man out in this. So I think Styles is the one who would get pinned.
I just am thinking about if I were one of these three guys. Man, oh man. Being in that company, and obviously they, a couple years ago, did the road to Bound for Glory with Bobby Roode. And then literally at the last minute, maybe not the last minute, literally on the last day, they pulled the rug out from under him and changed the finish. And granted, he did get the title about a week later, but point is, they changed their minds at the last minute. And then James Storm was going to win the title at Lockdown and changed their minds at the last minute. And then James Storm was going to win the title at Bound for Glory, and guess what? Changed their minds en route. So if I were, for example, AJ Styles, and they said, listen, buddy, so we're going to pin you, and you're not going to get the championship, but we're going to build you up, and you're going to take that title at Bound for Glory, I'd be like, really, fool? I don't buy a word you're saying right now about this. So I guess we'll see what they do. I guess I'm probably... The problem is I'm taking the stipulation way too seriously. Stipulations are designed to be broken in 2012. Maybe they really will stick to it. But, man, it would suck to be the guy who's told you're just going to be a guy for 11 more months. And granted, they may try to build him up. But I don't know. I don't trust any of these long-term storylines in TNA. You've always got Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff there to come in. And in Hulk Hogan's own words, screw everything up. So I guess we'll see what happens on that one.
Bobby Roode could always take the fall, quit, and then join up with Aces and Eights or Bischoff or something like that, too. I mean, again, it would be cheap ways to do it. But as you said, the stipulations just don't mean anything anymore. So, you know, again, whatever happens, they'll have a way to back out of it.
Magnus and Samoa Joe, no DQ match for the TV title. The no DQ stipulation suggests to me, title change! I don't know how, but I like Joe as champ, but I like Magnus a lot as well. Hopefully they have a good match. I actually missed the match last time because my cable company couldn't figure out how to provide me with the pay-per-view that I paid for, and then charge me twice, I might add. So hopefully this match is good and I get to see it. We shall see.
Yeah, I like Magnus a lot too, and you know, them tying those two up with each other, it's one of those things on the undercard that doesn't make you want to turn your head, or at least it's, you know, they've got a little bit of value there with those two guys. I guess we'll see what they're going to do with Magnus, because if he loses to Joe, I don't know. You know, obviously he won't be in title contention for anything, so you'd have to come up with something else entertaining for him. And again, I'd like to just see, you know, Joe doesn't need the belt, and I wouldn't hurt my feelings to see Magnus get the push, so I'll go with Magnus winning the title.
And Kurt Angle and D-Von, of course, is one of the members of Aces and Eights now. And D-Von has been here and there in his singles career. Kurt Angle, he actually looked great on Thursday. He's looked great for a while. And I'm expecting a good match. Not a great match, a good match. And I think it'll be one of those days where people are like, oh my God, I didn't realize how good D-Von was. Because that's what happens when people wrestle a motivated Kurt Angle.
Yeah, I think the same thing. It's Kurt Angle, so you know he's going to kill himself, you know, no matter what. And, you know, D-Von's not, you know, super spry or anything like that, but he can hold up his end of the deal. And, you know, it's somebody that the fans are going to react to anyway with both guys in there. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be the show stealer or anything like that, but I think it's going to be a good, solid match.
You don't exactly sound thrilled with the show, Mike.
Well, I'm still stuck thinking about Big Feet.
I see. The show ain't doing much for you, is it?
It really isn't. It really, really isn't.
Yeah. What about Joey Ryan and RVD? Is that lighting your world on fire?
You know, ironically enough, it is not. I've seen a little of Joey Ryan from PWG. I haven't seen as much as a lot of the people, especially on our website, have seen of him. And even you know, going down for Battle of Los Angeles and things like that. But I do know that Rob Van Dam needs a guy who can work with Rob Van Dam to get the best match, you know, out of him and out of his style. And I just don't know how this styles clash is going to be or anything like that. But, again, I don't mind having Joey Ryan there. I'm not down on him or anything like that because he is a guy who, you know, he is a personality. He's got charisma. He's got the shirt that at least you'd be able to make some money off and sell for him. So it doesn't hurt my feelings that he's there, but as far as like being in a title mix of anything like that, I wouldn't think so. He's just, you know, seems to fit a spot on, you know, somewhere on the undercard.
Well, he's going to be facing RVD for the X Division title. I kind of expect a title change, maybe not. RVD, I never really noticed this before till people started bringing it up in previous shows, but RVD never seems to put anyone over. You know what I mean? Like, he loses to the top guys, but he never seems to lose to someone who's not a top guy. So there's that part of me that just figures, well, he's beaten Joey Ryan. But if you're going to do something with Joey Ryan, you should probably put a belt on him now, because at this point, I don't think a single person watching takes him seriously. So I don't know if they'll take him seriously if he wins the title either, but hey, at least you're trying something. So I vote for a title change in this particular bout.
Remember when he came back on Raw for that one-time appearance, which was a big surprise? Didn't he, like, beat Randy Orton or something like that?
I seem to remember he pinned somebody with a frog splash, yes. I can't remember who. It's very possible.
Got to protect the brand.
I think that they figured at the point that he wasn't going anywhere, and at the time he wasn't, so. Tara and Jesse against ODB and Eric Young mixed tag, we talked about that. And finally, you didn't see Impact this Thursday. They actually did a great angle with the former Luke Gallows, who beat the holy hell out of Sting with a hammer. It's actually a great, it was a very well done injury angle. They had a gimmicked hammer, obviously. Gimmicked enough that it didn't look like completely fake, but gimmicked enough that he actually just was whacking this guy with his hammer. I mean, this wasn't like where you swing the hammer and stomp your foot on the mat to make the sound. Nope, he just hit Sting with his hammer really hard, repeatedly, and Sting sold it like he was dead. And it was a good angle to try to get Luke Gallows over. They love Luke Gallows. They think that WWE totally dropped the ball on him. They're going to push him super hard. And as soon as I saw this match on the graphic on the screen on Thursday, I was like, wow, Joe Park is going to take a beating in this match. This guy is going to get killed. So I don't think anybody expects otherwise. Maybe there are some people that actually think that Joe Park is going to beat Luke Gallows. But I guess there were people that thought that... Kung Lee was going to get killed by Rich Franklin and not vice versa. Unfortunately, this is not real. It is a worked sport. So don't get your hopes up about the happy upset with Joe Park beating the director of chaos, Doc.
Doc. Yeah, Doc. I wasn't sure if it was the DOC. Like, maybe they got the guy who did the song The Formula back in the 80s. They pulled him out of somewhere, but... You know, people can't forget about one thing when it comes to Joseph Park. He's still the guy that played Abyss, and no matter what, whether there were, if people wanted broken glass, they'd give him broken glass. Light him on fire, light him on fire. Barbed wire, sure, why not? That's still that guy, and the way you're going to get over Luke Gallows and the way you're going to get over the whole thing with aces and eights is by, you know, having something like this where Joe Park is going to get killed and there will be blood everywhere. Hopefully he wears his white suit that I'm sure he has, a nice white jogging suit, because you might as well go ahead and do a whole lot of blood here. It wouldn't make any other sense not to. I mean, the man beats Sting with a hammer. What is he going to do to Joe Park? So
yeah.
Luke Gallows, I think they did drop the ball with him, and I think a lot of people thought that. You know, obviously he's not going to be... You know, your world champion or anywhere in the level of John Cena or Randy Orton or anything like that. But I think they did kind of have something with him in the Straight Edge Society, and they just kind of let the ball drop on him. So hopefully this is a good, you know, opportunity for him in TNA.
TNA Turning Point, Orlando, Florida, the Impact Zone. It's taking place moments after the show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And then Dave and I are going to be back later on tonight. Brand new radio show. We'll tell you who won all the matches, how, whether they were any good, how the crowd was. It's very hit and miss at the Impact Zone. Usually, like, TVs are hot and pay-per-views are cold. I don't even know why, but that's what happened. So, anyway, we're going to be back in just a moment with more here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, who is back, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. And Mike will talk more about this Survivor Series after a while. But there is a three-way with CM Punk, Ryback, and John Cena. And looking at WrestleMania season, just one quick question. Would you, if you were in charge, do Rock versus Punk at Rumble and Rock versus Cena for the title at WrestleMania? Or would you do Rock versus Cena at the Royal Rumble and Rock versus CM Punk at WrestleMania?
Boy, that, you know, I think you can win either way if you do it right. I think, you know what, I think I'd do Rock Punk at WrestleMania. I would if you still are hot-handed with CM Punk going through and you're able to pull that off, absolutely. I think you go ahead and do that because you have that dynamic. You can put Cena in a match where he's not going to get booed out of the building as much. You know, he's going to get booed anyway. It's the New York market, and they're going to, you know, dig their hooks into him. But I may want to go that direction. I think that could actually work.
I vote for Rock Punk at WrestleMania. I think that Cena and Rock has already been done at WrestleMania. I think they promised once in a lifetime. I know that means nothing. But I think that John Cena and Rock is going to boost the Royal Rumble significantly. And I think that Punk versus Rock at WrestleMania isn't going to hurt WrestleMania one bit. Everyone is going to buy the show is going to buy the show. Rock's going to be on the show wrestling as the champion. Punk and Rock can do some great back and forth leading up to WrestleMania. And I'll just say this. I don't know what this means, but as of a couple of days ago, the plan was for CM Punk to close out WrestleMania this year. And to me, that means he is fighting Rock for the title in the main event. But plans change. Back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com and on your TuneIn Radio app. On your smartphone, search Sports Byline to listen to the show live, plus archives every single week. And Mike is back from a Hurricane Sandy, what would be the word, hiatus for the last couple of weeks. He is back. He is fine. Things are all right. And presumably you're doing even better because you just watched the New Japan iPay-per-view. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. And that will always make me feel better. $25, you know, it's going to be how much for a TNA night? About $40. $25 for the New Japan iPay-per-view, which, even if it's, you know, you don't understand Japanese, and, well, I don't, it's still a great wrestling show, and not as good as the October 8th Sumo Hall show, obviously. This is just, you know, there was probably not even a plan to have this on iPay-per-view, but with the success of the last one, they decided to change their minds. But again, another really good show with five really good matches on there, three of which Prince Devitt defeating Lowkey to become the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion again. It's his third reign. Beat him at 13:45. He almost got the pin on him, but then Devitt reversed a Key Crusher attempt into a small package and got the win there. I thought that was a really good match. Then after that was Kazushi Sakuraba and Katsuyori Shibata defeating Togi Makabe and Wataru Inoue. In a match where, I mean, the fans were way into this match, and Sakuraba made Inoue tap to a Kimura. And then the match after that, the number one contenders match between Kaz Okada and Hirooki Goto, two of the young stars of New Japan, especially Okada, who's great right now. Okada got the win there to secure his number one contendership for Tanahashi for 1-4, and they were just three really good matches, but all, you know, completely different, completely distinct, and you know, there was some other good stuff on there as well, but really, really good stuff.
We'll talk about the other matches when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I am hoping that during the break, you were down sitting in the DVR to record tonight's big event, Finding Bigfoot season premiere on Animal Planet.
I was actually trying to find the channel that Animal Planet was on in HD.
6:30.
Which channel is it?
6:30.
Well, for you it is, but you know, us low life still have, you know, the sorry Comcast service out here.
What are you talking about? They're not the same everywhere?
No, believe it or not.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, they just gave me Galavision and WAPA. I mean, what kind of, you know, cable system has got a Latino tier package and does not have, you know, Galavision, Univision, and WAPA on there? It made no sense.
I don't think I get Galavision. I might. I think I get Univision. So are you going to be watching more Lucha now?
Well, that's my attempt to, but every time I try to set the DVR for it, I remember the joys of having Galavision where it's scheduled to come on, but instead you just get like a replay of Chespirito or something like that. So I've been able to not set the DVR for that, but it does give me, you know, plenty of room to fill up with Sabado Gigante.
You know, your boy Tanahashi goes down there to Mexico here and there.
Yes, he does. Yes, yeah. He does.
Are you excited for that? See him do some
Lucha?
I am excited
for that. CMLL fans aren't usually excited to see New Japan guys because they usually go over there and ride roughshod, and they have to deal with Taichi and things of that nature. But it always works out relatively well for New Japan. We tend to get the better end of that deal being a Japanese wrestling fan.
All right, continue your review of the New Japan I pay-per-view.
Yeah, it opened up. Now, this was held in Osaka, the Osaka Professional Gymnasium, which for some, I have no idea how this happened.
I hate to cut you off, but we should add, by the way, just for everybody listening, that you can still get this show on Ustream. So we're not talking about something that you cannot see. If you head to Ustream and search for New Japan, you can get this iPay-per-view. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think it's like ustream.com/. I think it's NJPW1972. Some people wonder what that's for. It's because that's, you know, they're in their 40th anniversary year, so that's what that stands for. But it was held in Osaka, and apparently the professional gymnasium is now called the Bodymaker. The Bodymaker Gymnasium. I have no idea why that's the case, but
because it's awesome.
That's the opening match, and they sold it out. The opening match was the Time Splitters team of Kushida and Alex Shelley defeating Forever Hooligans, Alex Kozlov and Rocky Romero, to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Before the match, by the way, Kozlov demanded that the ring announcer make everyone stand up so he could sing the Russian national anthem, which was a hilarious new wrinkle into their wackiness. But a good stereotypical junior tag match to start the show, lots of speed and double team moves and having four guys in the ring. And the finish came when Kushida put Romero up on his shoulders and Alex Shelley delivered a super slice spread from the top rope, and that was got the pin at about 6:20. So they become the 34th champions. Then there was a 10-team tag or a 10-man tag bout with Toru Yano, Tomohiro Ishii, Takashi Iizuka, Yoshihashi, and Jado defeating Manabu Nakanishi, Jushin Thunder Liger, Tiger Mask 4, Captain New Japan, and Negro Casas. When Yano got the pin on Nakanishi, this was Nakanishi's second big match coming back from his injuries. In tradition, usually when you come back from an injury, you lose your next couple of matches, but you lose them to the guy that at some point you're going to get the win over at the end. And I can see Yano and Nakanishi having a match on January 4th, just so Nakanishi can get his revenge. The third match was Minoru Suzuki and Taichi defeating Yuji Nagata and Raisuke Taguchi. Not sure, you know, Suzuki had the great match with Tanahashi last time around. Nagata, as a veteran, has been around a long time, and I know he's actually in the NOAH heavyweight league we're going on right now, and he's kind of bouncing about. So I wonder if those two guys are in a relative holding pattern for right now, but that was a good match as well. Then there was the IWGP World Tag Team title match that saw Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr., which is the name that Harry Smith goes by now in New Japan, defeating Hiroshi Tenzan and Satoshi Kojima to retain the titles in their first defense. This was a rematch of them winning the belts on the last iPay-per-view. A much better match this was than the last time around. The crowd is way still into Tenzan and Kojima. The next match before intermission was that low-key Prince Devitt match, which, you know, I wasn't as high on the Ibushi low-key match as you were and that a lot of people were, and I actually thought this was a better match in a little bit of a different way. The finish seemed to kind of come out of nowhere. That was a little bit of a surprise, but they went 15 minutes, and Devitt's now the champion. The match that really got everybody into it, though, was that the match after intermission, which was Sakuraba and Shibata defeating Makabe and Inoue. Sakuraba made Inoue tap to a Kimura. The match and everyone involved were way over, especially the interaction between Inoue and Sakuraba. Much of it was, in a way, just kind of surviving Shibata and then Sakuraba. When Shibata and Makabe started brawling outside the ring, they brawled to the back. They brawled after the match together. So that's probably going to be a big match you get on January 4th, too, because New Japan really doesn't have that many big shows coming up between now and then. So they're probably looking to angle that for their big show on January 4th. Then the number one contenders match between Okada and Goto, I already talked about. The Intercontinental Championship match, Carl Anderson and Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura retained. It looked like Anderson, you know, there were feelings that he could win the belt and then you could have him face somebody from the outside on January 4th. But they have Nakamura hold on to the belt. And then the IWGP Heavyweight title match between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Yujiro was actually really good. This was a big match for Yujiro to step up, and he has it against a guy in Tanahashi who can have a great match with anybody. Went 25 minutes, Tanahashi gets the win, no big surprise there. Then after the match, they finally have the contract signing for Tanahashi and Okada, and that's what's going to be the main event at the Tokyo Dome on January 4th.
So overall, thumbs up?
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, again, $25 well spent was not as great as the Sumo Hall show, and that's going to be the case. I mean, they're probably going to run pay-per-views every month. And usually New Japan's got a gimmick for every month, whether it be in February with CMLL where they do Fantastic Mania or you know, the G1 or something like that. But, you know, the November show is, you know, some things usually happen on it. There have been title changes and things like that, but it's kind of a big, you know, a B-show placeholder to set up the Dome show coming up on January 4th, and that's exactly what this was. But if you do spend the $25 on it, you at least get your money's worth definitely out of that.
Jerry Lawler returns tomorrow, about 2 months after suffering a near-fatal heart attack. Pretty much as close as you can get to a fatal heart attack as you can get without it actually being fatal, in fact. And he returns to the booth, and as of this moment, it'll be Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and yes, Jim Ross! Three of them are going to be doing the show together. How long that will last is anybody's guess. I presume they'll find out if Lawler is capable of doing 2 hours without any problem. And if that's the case, then that'll probably be the end of Jim Ross. Ross was only scheduled to be there until Jerry Lawler returned. But if you've been watching the show, lo and behold, Jim Ross is a good commentator. So maybe there's been maybe there will be a change of heart, and they'll decide, man, let's keep Jim Ross in the booth. We're paying him anyway. Might as well make the most of him. So we'll see what happens tomorrow, but good to see the King coming back.
Yeah, you know, something always happens that brings them around to Jim Ross again, and you know, they realize that nobody else is going to be able to get these type of angles over and make people want to buy what they're selling like Jim Ross can. And it's made Michael Cole better, and obviously dropping the shtick and all that stuff. I mean, Michael Cole has been, obviously when he was doing the stuff with Lawler and they had him hamming it up, he was, you know, completely awful. But, you know, he's made a lot of strides in his career, and he's not a bad announcer at all when he's playing it straight. And teamed up with Jim Ross, I think it's great. And, again, I know they may not want to have a three-man booth, but this isn't like Nitro or anything like that, where if you have Lawler, JR, and Cole together, I think that's a good idea. I mean, you can do the same thing on SmackDown as well, too. Keep JBL there, have Jim Ross, and have Michael Cole. They probably wouldn't do something like that, but it wouldn't hurt my feelings either if they did. But it's probably only going to be temporary, but it would actually be nice. It breaks up the monotony, especially in a three-hour show. And Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler playing off each other but not doing it all the time so it gets stale because you have Cole there. I would rather actually see how it goes with three guys and just immediately dump it now that Jerry Lawler's coming back.
Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Plus, check out the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. You can search for the Sports Byline channel. Listen to all of the Sports Byline programming, including this show. You can hear it live, and you can search and find replays of the show as well in case you miss Wrestling Observer Live. Once again, that is the TuneIn Radio app. Check it out. Of course,
such
later
a good
on.
App. I actually bought the pro version of it.
Really?
I did.
I think the pro version's like $2 or $4 or something, right?
I think it was something like that. Maybe it was $2 or $3, but whatever it was, it is well worth it, actually.
That's right. There's so much stuff you can listen to on the TuneIn Radio app. A lot of things I should be getting paid for here, sponsorship money, but I'm just plugging them out of the love of my heart for these things, including Finding Bigfoot tonight, Animal Planet. Check it out. Now, Mike, before we get into some more news, tell everybody about the life of Brad Armstrong, one of the great workers of the last few decades, who never really made it to the top, but was well known by everybody inside of wrestling. Everybody wanted to work with him. Great worker, great guy, passed away at 51, apparently of a heart attack in his sleep.
Yeah, he's everything that everybody, anytime you hear anybody say anything about Brad Armstrong, they talk about, you know, how underrated and underused he was as a worker, and they also talk about, you know, what kind of a good guy he was, and that's all true, and which makes it even, you know, worse. It just, you know, a guy that was in shape, you know, no thoughts of having any issues or anything like that, but, yeah, found dead by his wife after the heart attack at such a young age, and it's his career. I mean, I think the first time I saw him was really, really young. Was in Georgia, actually. You know, around the time Ted DiBiase, Jake Roberts, Ronnie Garvin was there, but before, you know, WWF went in and bought Georgia. But where he really, you know, caught my eye was watching in Crockett, where he was one of the guys that after Lex Luger had come in from Florida and they broke up the Four Horsemen, kicked Ole Anderson out, it was Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner that teamed up with Ole, and they would have these six-man tag team matches against Tully Blanchard, Ric Flair, and Arn Anderson that were great. And, you know, the Lightning Express, which Armstrong and Horner were always one of my, you know, my favorite kind of underrated tag teams. There were lots of teams I liked more, but, you know, I loved seeing them around and seeing them in UWF. And Armstrong was just so smooth, and he was just so good at everything that he did that it's just too bad that, you know, his size was held against him, and they never just seemed to really go anywhere with him, you know. You know, Pillman slapping him and stuff like that. He was always used as parts of angles and parts to get other guys over, but for whatever reason, and, you know, he just could not, you know, connect with the office where they wanted to put him in a, you know, a really good role. And again, like, you know, I think in the Observer this week, people had talked about it, Ric Flair's talked about it. He was just so smooth and easy to work with. He was the ultimate night off. And, you know, I liked most of his characters, even the dumb ones like Fantasia and, you know, Bad Street, and they always, Arachnaman, they always gave him this goofy stuff because they wanted him to, they didn't think he had enough charisma to carry the deal, and that's not the case. He always had good interviews. They weren't the greatest or anything like that, but he got a chance to learn from Bob Armstrong, who, you know, his father, which, you know, always had great interviews. So it's just too bad he could never really get his due as far as having, you know, a singles run. And it's too bad that junior heavyweights, who are really smooth, were so underappreciated. They still are now in a lot of ways, but that was the biggest thing with him, and it's just really too bad to be that young and to be that, you know, beloved by everyone. It really hurt everybody's feelings pretty bad.
Yeah, we had Carl Stern on the show talking about, if you have a subscription to the site, you can go listen to that. He knew Brad, and seems like everybody said the same thing. Nice guy, funny guy. It never seemed bitter that he didn't become a top guy. He was happy doing what he was doing, and in the last few years, he'd worked at a health food store, and he was working out a lot, and apparently he looked good, and even family members didn't know anything about any health issues. He's got one brother who's a referee, obviously, Scott Armstrong, and Brian Armstrong, the road dog, is working with WWE, and they were taken off the road, but they knew nothing about it. You know, it was a very, very sad situation. But
that's only a couple days before that, too, was in a tag match where he was facing off against Dr. Tom Pritchard on the other side down
that's
in
right.
Alabama. I mean, you know, you can still book, you know, it's amazing, you can still book the Armstrongs down there. You know, obviously, you know, Scott and Road Dogg being up in WWF, you know, not with them, but, you know, every once in a while he would still wrestle matches down there, and you know, it was still a bit of a draw. So, yeah, just, again, just absolutely came out of nowhere.
WrestleMania tickets went on sale yesterday, and I don't have a full breakdown of how many were sold, but a lot. There is a possibility that, well, this will shatter the old record for ticket sales, but there's a possibility the gate for this show may even beat the GSP Toronto gate of $11 million that was set by UFC. These tickets were expensive. And I think the idea was a lot of them were going to be snatched up by ardent fans and I guess ticket brokers to be resold. And the prices for front row were, I believe, $2,000. I'd have to actually go look at the breakdown. But the point of all of this is they have sold a lot of tickets for WrestleMania. It is going to be a hugely successful financial event. So whatever you think about the television lately, I know that there was somebody on my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, who just read Death of WCW, which of course I very much appreciate. And he said, I don't see a lot of differences between WCW at the end and WWE today. And I noted that there was actually one very big difference, that being about $150 million in profit difference between the two companies over the course of a year. WCW is putting on all this terrible programming and losing $60 to $80 million, whereas WWE is putting on whatever you think of their programming, and meanwhile, they should gross about $50 million in profit this year, maybe even a little bit more than that. But obviously the network's going to take a bite. But as far as like pure wrestling operations, they're making millions and millions of dollars profit every single year. So that's the big difference between the two companies. But WrestleMania, it's kind of becoming a thing. It has been for a few years now where the year is the year, but then they make all their money WrestleMania season, kind of like a lot of retailers make all their money on Black Friday. And then they survive the rest of the year, make all their money Black Friday, and so on and so forth. Obviously, not every business is like that, but some are. So that is the story of the WWE ticket sales. And when are you going to WrestleMania, Mike?
It won't be this year.
Nah, but, come on. It's so close.
I know.
You can practically jog there.
My jaunt to New York will probably be for Bones Jones and Chael Sonnen. That's around that same time. I guess that's going to be on April 27th at the Prudential Center, the Rock up there in Newark. But it's, you know, it says something. You talked about the $100 million that was spent on the two campaigns now in the last 4 years for Lynn McMahon for Senate in New York, the XFL, the World, the upcoming network, you name it. The one amazing thing is the amount of money and the amount of cash that they actually have on hand, and they could crap the bed for, you know, the entire year, and they couldn't do it over and over again for a long time because at some point it would affect WrestleMania. But for the most part, as long as WrestleMania is strong, that's the one event that they really need, even if everything else had died off, to easily make it through the year. And you know, the gate for this is going to be huge. This is going to be, you know, mammoth. Having in the New York area is, you know, in the amount of money they can charge for these tickets and what it's going to do on pay-per-view and the whole nine yards. Yeah, it's going to be huge.
All right, I'm doing a little bit of investigation here. I believe the biggest WrestleMania gate of all time was WrestleMania 28, which would have been last year. And to find what the gate actually was. I believe it was like $7.5 million. Let's see here. WWE claimed $8.9 million. So there you go. That was last year. This year they've already shattered that record. I believe they're up above $10 million for the gate right now. Almost 50,000 seats sold. They are at the MetLife Stadium this year. So let me see what the capacity of MetLife Stadium is.
Around like 80,000.
Yep, 82,000, which means you could probably get 85,000 if you set it up for wrestling. They ain't getting 85,000. I would be stunned. But I'd be shocked if they didn't get 60,000. So that would mean they should easily. They probably will do a $12 million gate, which means this year's WrestleMania, for whatever you think about WWE nowadays, this year's WrestleMania is in fact going to be the largest grossing pro wrestling or mixed martial arts, beating every pro wrestling company that has ever existed in this world, every MMA company, including UFC. This will be the biggest live gate for a sports entertainment show of all time. And I think even adjusting for inflation, by far the biggest of all time. So, yeah, they're doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, nothing you can say about that. And it's just, it's too bad you don't have a magic ball to look in the future for that last match that Undertaker's going to have, and hopefully a time where Steve Austin could do one more, because, you know, at some point, like everyone, they're going to be salivating to do that show in Dallas, you know, International Airport, the whole nine yards there being a convention city, and you have that WrestleMania at that Jerry Jones Palace down there in Dallas, and you try to do what everybody wants to do, which is be able to claim 100,000 people, whether they're there or not.
It's going to be interesting to see what they headline with. It'd be something else for CM Punk, of all people, to headline the biggest grossing sports entertainment live event ever anywhere in the world. That's a bucket list thing right there. We're going to head to a break. Back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates, tons and tons of radio shows. If you love this program and you only get to hear it once per week, you are missing out. Daily radio shows, sometimes several shows per day, up at WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer and I did a brand new show last night talking UFC in China and all of the news. We got another show tonight talking the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view. We got another show tomorrow talking Raw and all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And if you sign up today, it's not only do you get these brand new radio shows for a low, low cost of $10.99 per month, plus you get every single radio show we have ever done in the archives. So basically, for $10.99, you get all of the content that we have done since 2005, which doesn't seem fair to those who have been paying since 2005, but they're caught up and you're not, and you'll probably never get caught up, because that's thousands of radio shows that you'd have to listen to hear everything that everybody has listened to since 2005. So jump into it right now, WrestlingObserver.com. Check out the right-hand side of the page. It's a listing of our latest free radio shows. They sound exactly like the show you're listening to right now. They're all recorded in the same studio. The best audio quality of any pro wrestling or mixed martial arts website on the internet. And on the front page, on the right-hand side, you can get information on how to download the shows to your phone via iTunes. So check that out. All the audio you can possibly listen to is available as a subscriber. And Mike has noted tonight is the Turning Point pay-per-view. Last night was UFC in China on Fuel TV. A shocking upset in the main event as Rich Franklin went in there, chin up, hands down, knocked out. One-punch knockout by Kung Lee. And I know you and everybody else that made picks for this show, shockingly upset by this turn of events. What did you think of the show?
Yeah, I wanted to take Kung Lee. I just, you know, I try to make those picks as if I was going to actually separate myself from money. And you just, why would, you know, and again, we also made these picks before any of us had a chance to see Rich Franklin on the scale the Friday morning, who looked very, very weak. You know, he looked much more hydrated and recovered by the time the fight started with Lee. But, you know, regardless of anything, when you get caught and your hands are down, you leave your jaw sitting out there in an exchange, no matter, you know, what, you know, Lee is or what you think about him or where do you think his career is going, you know, he still got enough power to knock somebody out, and you leave your chin out there like that, and that's exactly what happened. Just a counter right hand, you know, nothing even major. It wasn't like a huge flurry or anything going on like that, and, you know, just bang. And Rich Franklin just puts another one in his column of some spectacular ass kickings he's taken in the UFC. Highlight reel style. There was just another one, and I didn't get a chance to see the entire show, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because the fact was that was a nice explanation point on what was really a relatively boring night leading up to it.
Howard apparently thought the show was more boring than I did. It wasn't the greatest show of all time or anything like that, but I think I actually did start to get bored. It might have actually been in the fight that won the fight of the night, which is ironic. But, yeah, there was a lot of decisions on the show. I guess part of it was I did not wake up at 4:30 a.m. Pacific to watch the prelims on Facebook. I only watched the main show. So I only had to watch 4 fights go to decision as opposed to, like, 9. But still,
it's in people's heads, too. It's a lot of guys you don't know. It's on at a weird time. It's in a weird country, and you're not used to the crowd, and it wasn't a big crowd. They only did, you know, it was kind of a surprise to me that they only did about, I think it was about 8,500 or so in their first trip to Macau. I think all of that, on top of the fact that there were so many decisions, I think all of that kind of combines together, too, and drags people down more than maybe it should.
I don't know if I'm surprised by the number of people that showed up. I wasn't expecting, like millions and millions and millions of people. I realize that China is gigantic, and I realize they see all of those human beings there, and they're like, man, if we could get 1% of those people to watch this. But I don't think it works like that. I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, I got reports from people who were there live, and I got reports from people that were watching on television. And obviously, if you're watching on television, you're hardcore. You're watching this on Fuel television. You may have gotten up at 8 a.m. Pacific, for crying out loud. You're a different kind of fan. And there were a lot of thumbs up from those that thumbs up, thumbs in the middle from those that watched on television. But the live reports were very different. Live reports were, I'm here. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows anybody. Nobody understands what's happening in the cage. There's a lot of booing. And, you know, you're in a very populous country putting on an event that only the absolute hardest of the hardcores even understand. Like, a lot of the people that went to the event live weren't even hardcore enough to understand what was going on. So I understand international expansion. I understand trying to tap into markets all over the world. But at the same time, everybody wants to make it big in China. But there's no guarantee that just because a lot of people live there, your sport or your event or whatever is just going to be a source of perpetual money. Money flowing in. I don't have a better way to term that. But I think that's what a lot of people think, and I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Well, and the fact that, you know, Macau is a, you know, it's like Hong Kong in that it's a, you know, one, it was Portuguese. So, yeah, I think there were people surprised with the fact that, well, Brazilians got some reaction. Well, that's probably because if anybody heard lead-ins and, you know, they actually had some Portuguese blood, you know, they may have actually understood what they were saying. But it's also, it's not like you're in mainland China of where there would be, like, all of these billions of people going to the show or anything like that. It's a resort area, and that's the thing that surprised me a little bit more was because it's, you know, there's gambling there and you know, it's been a resort for, I think Inoki would go there and Japanese businessmen have and Russian businessmen. I just thought they would have more that way, tying it in with, you know, like a boxing or a K-1 event or something like that, some of the stuff they've had there where it was a draw, like, you know, everybody come over to see the fight, but it's also to gamble, go on vacation, that sort of stuff too. That's what actually surprised me with the fact that the crowd was so small, because I thought it would be just more of a destination draw for this weekend.
The other issue is when you go to another market. I mean, Brazil is a perfect example. Like the Brazil shows, like Ultimate Fighter on Globo in Brazil. I mean, these shows are doing millions and millions and millions of viewers. I mean, we're talking 11, 12, 15 million viewers for these shows. And so these guys that are winning the season are gigantic superstars coming out of the gate. So you could take a Honey Jason and you can put him in a top fight on a show in Brazil, And that doesn't mean anything to people in the United States, but that means a lot to the people in Brazil. So you've got a headline with a native star, and you had this, you had a show in China, and so you stocked it with a bunch of fighters from, say, Japan, and you're expecting a Japanese fighter to be accepted as a native fighter on a show in China. And in Kung Lee, for example, Vietnamese, you're expecting him to be accepted as a hometown hero on a show in China. I mean, there was also that aspect, which I just thought was very strange.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how the race things work now, but because of World War II and things like that, I mean, you know, Chinese and Koreans that don't like the Japanese and vice versa and all of that, too, where, you know, again, I don't know if feelings are still hard or anything like that, but, you know, it does play into it, too.
Also on the card, as I pull up my report here, I as noted, a lot of people thought the show was boring. I thought it was all right. There were a couple of fights that I don't know what it is, but what people think is like a great fight and what I think is a great fight, not always, we're not always on the same page. Like Mac Danzig and Takanori Gomi, I think that might have won Fight of the Night. I'm not sure. But that fight, I was ready to start fast forwarding. I was just so bored with that fight. And same with Stanislav Netkov and Thiago Silva. Bored with the fight, but then we had a great finish. So that helped, an arm triangle submission. I did like Dong Hyun Kim and Paulo Thiago, mostly just of the story of it, which is that, you know, Kim was beaten in his last fight due to fluke rib injury. He faced Damian Maia, and like almost immediately his rib went out and he was beaten. And he was very upset. It was the only loss on his record in UFC. He wants to avenge that. And so in this fight, they gave him another Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And he went in there and just took this dude apart. Just ate this dude's lunch. And beat him on one card, 30-26. And then afterwards, they've got a show coming up in Japan. And so Kim put out the challenge to Damian Maia. He wants his rematch. It was a perfect story. So I did enjoy that a lot. And John Tuck and Tiquan Zhang liked the fight till the third round when John Tuck was just tired and coasted to a victory. And Jeff Hoagland and Takei Mizugaki was fun just because Hoagland's a tough guy. Outclassed completely. One judge gave it a 30-25. He was so outclassed. I thought that was preposterous, but I'm not a judge. But Mizugaki beat him up real bad for three rounds and got the win. So I thought the show was fine.
Well, he said about Kim, too. Kim does actually have a loss. He got knocked out by Carlos Condit, but that's, you know, Condit is a threat to beat GSP coming up here this weekend. So, you know, not exactly all that awful of a thing, you know, trying to get his revenge back.
Any other thoughts on the show before we move on to the death of Strikeforce?
No, not really at all, other than the fact that the death of Strikeforce will, you know, again, it doesn't do, nobody's paying, I don't think, at this point to see OSP or anything like that, but adding some depth to some of the cards like this, and, you know, I understand why Kung Lee had to be used for this show, but again, you know, Lee and Franklin should have been on another show, not main eventing a UFC on Fuel show. I mean, I defend them running as many shows as they do, but they have to have a restructure to them, and getting more bodies in from Strikeforce, depending on the contracts that they, you know, go ahead and pick up or go ahead and acquire, will make shows like this a lot more tolerable, and it saves people on some of these other shows.
Strikeforce is dead after the January show. A stacked card, at least that's what they're claiming. I personally think that now that these guys discover that after this show they'll all be in UFC, I think 50% of the people on this card are going to get hurt, and move to a more lucrative UFC event where they can actually win, for example, a best fight, best knockout, best submission bonus. But we'll see how it goes. Ronda Rousey is now the first ever UFC 135-pound women's champion. The women are coming to UFC, Mike. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I hope Dana is. I've been ready for this for a long time.
Oh, Dana's ready. pretty much
he's ready now, but you know what? Be even more ready. Get Marlos Conan back. Drop that stuff with Golden Glory and, you know, have these one-off fights because you don't have divisions.
Well, that's not his his deal now. She's signed elsewhere, so. But we're going to have to get some people in there. They're going to have to do a working relationship with Invicta. They're going to have to get some women. It's going to be a very interesting 2013 for UFC. Seeing how Ronda Rousey does as a draw and how the women do in UFC on the undercard, it's going to be a very interesting year. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We got 2 minutes, Mike. How would you handle Ronda Rousey and Cyborg? When do you book that fight? Immediately?
No, not immediately. Just depending on what you have coming up at the, during the year. Your July is always going to be their big show every year. Don't know if I want to wait that long for it. I'd probably do it in the first quarter. January, yeah, I'd have to see the lineup, but I'd say, you know, as soon as you can get it done, if it's, you know, April, May, something like that, I think that would be a good idea. And, you know, again, having the women, because of the deep divisions, Dana always bitched and moaned and whined about that. You don't need deep divisions, you know. Boxing didn't need big divisions for Jackie Fraser Lyle and Muhammad Ali's daughter Layla to get 100,000 pay-per-view buys just completely out of nowhere. You just need to sell the fight, and those two will be able to sell the fight. And I would do it as relatively as soon as possible, just because you don't want something freak to happen to either one of them, especially a Rousey loss, even though I can't see anybody beating her for a while.
All right, everybody, we are completely out of time, but that's not the end of the audio today. If you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com tonight, Dave Meltzer and I back with a brand new audio show. We're going to be talking TNA Turning Point, all of the matches on the show, backstage news and notes that we gather from the event, and a lot more that is coming up tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be back tomorrow as well to talk Raw, the Road to the Survivor Series, which is coming up very soon, next Sunday, in fact, as well as GSP versus Carlos Condit, which is coming up this Saturday night, and so much more. All of that is coming up on the website. Mike, of course, will be back with a brand new Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at some point down the road. That is his show up at WrestlingObserver.com. So make sure you check that out. And we'll be back next week. We'll have a lot of shows to talk about and preview, including the GSP show. We'll give you all the results of that next week on this program, plus preview the Survivor Series and so much more. So check it out, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Thanks, Mike. Thanks to folks at Sports Byline. Talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.